Good afternoon. My name is Megan Morris, bar number 43963, and I represent Mr. Beckley. The opportunity for cross-examination is without equal as a tool in the search for truth. The trial court took this tool away and crippled Mr. Bagley's defense in an admitted out-of-court statement that Mr. Bagley never had the opportunity to confront. In particular, the trial court allowed Officer Cruz to talk about Tushon Wilson's identification of Mr. Bagley, though Tushon Wilson never testified. The court allowed Officer Cruz to say that Tushon Wilson identified Mr. Bagley's photograph, saying, "That's that motherfucker right there." This statement was clearly testimonial hearsay, barred by the Confrontation Clause, and the state does not argue otherwise. So today, unless the court has any other questions about that, I'm planning to focus my argument on harm. Because the trial court admitted testimonial hearsay over Mr. Bagley's objection, this is a constitutional error, and it's the prosecution's burden to prove that this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The state relies on Officer Cruz's testimony identifying Mr. Bagley and claiming that Mr. Bagley confessed. But the circumstances of Officer Cruz's identification were weak. Here, there was a car, the stolen car was going in front of Officer Cruz. It was still moving when a driver jumped out of the car. This was at night. The driver ran in profile, and he was 20 to 30 yards away from Officer Cruz. Officer Cruz was only able to see him for 5 to 10 seconds. And further, Officer Cruz's own assessment of this identification was not very confident. He only said that this person appeared to be the same person that he later saw in the photograph. As to the confession, there's no documentation of Mr. Bagley's supposed confession. Even though Officer Cruz said that there was a written Miranda waiver, that there was a written confession, things that you would expect there to be documentation of. And the defense argued this heavily in closing, that it's kind of unclear why this happened, but in Officer Cruz, to find Mr. Bagley and to arrest him, they had, about 7 days after the incident here, had gone and conducted a raid with several officers at 11:30 at night in Mr. Bagley's apartment. They broke down his door with a battering ram. Inside, they found Mr. Bagley, his mother, and absolutely no evidence of the crime here. So the defense argued that this supposed confession was really a fabrication by Officer Cruz, an attempt to justify these kind of extreme measures that the police had taken to arrest him. In considering the harm here, I think it's helpful to compare this case with Frye, the Colorado Supreme Court case on the Confrontation Clause, where the court found confrontation error and then proceeded to find that that error was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. There, it was preliminary hearing testimony of an adverse witness that was admitted when the witness didn't testify. And that evidence wasn't harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, even though there were two other witnesses who gave similar corroborating testimony. The court said that even though there was this similar corroborating evidence, the erroneously admitted evidence was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because the credibility of both of those witnesses was subject to attack. Here, we only have one witness who provides any corroborating testimony, Officer Cruz. So on that score, this case is even stronger for harm than Frye. And again, as I just talked about, Cruz's testimony was heavily attacked by the defense. The defense heavily argued that he was not a credible witness.
Pardon me for interrupting this morning, if I may. This question focuses on Mr. Bagley's incriminating statements given to Officer Cruz.
Sure.
Were there any facts in the record to support defense counsel's assertion that the inculpatory statements were a fabrication?
Well, I think it's defense counsel's inference from the record that there's no documentation of these statements presented, and it's something where you would expect there to be documentation. So because the officer said there was a written Miranda waiver, the officer said there was a written confession, and yet there was nothing like that presented. So I think defense counsel is making that inference from the evidence that these statements have been mysteriously disappeared or lost, or as defense counsel argued, never existed in the first place.
In the course of cross-examining Officer Cruz, did defense counsel pushed this theory that he had made this up to cover up for a violent arrest?
Well, I think defense counsel argued or talked about with Officer Cruz about the fact that those statements weren't being admitted through him. I think she saved that argument about what that meant for closing. To continue the comparison with Fry, I think the other, another thing that the court notes there is that the prosecution refers to the improperly admitted evidence three times in closing argument. And here again, the case for harm is even stronger than with Fry. Twice in the original closing, prosecutor refers to this evidence, once saying that it's most importantly to Sean Wilson identified Mr. Bagley. The prosecutor referred to this evidence in opening, closing, and rebuttal. Most telling is that in rebuttal, the prosecutors had the opportunity to listen to defense counsel's theories about Officer Cruz's credibility, and has had the opportunity to view Officer Cruz himself. And he's clearly concerned about Officer Cruz's credibility and doesn't want the jury just relying on his statements. And so he tells the jury they don't have to. He says, defense counsel wants to say, well, we're relying only on Officer Cruz's testimony. We're relying only on what Officer Cruz purportedly heard from Thomas Bagley. That's not the case. Tushon Wilson was there. Tushon Wilson, immediately upon seeing a photograph of Thomas Bagley, says, that's him. That's the guy that just bolted. So unlike us on appeal, the prosecutors had the opportunity to view Officer Cruz. He's had the opportunity to view the impact of defense counsel's closing argument. And based on that rebuttal, he tells the jury, rely on Tushon Wilson's statements as my primary evidence that this was Mr. Bagley. Under these circumstances, this evidence cannot be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and I ask this court to reverse. Unless the court has other questions at this time, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Good afternoon, and may please the court. Carmen Moralita on behalf of the people. My attorney registration is 348252. I will focus my argument also on the confrontation claim.
The people agree that it appears that the explicit statement by the passenger implicated the confrontation clause. However, no reversal is required here because the error was harmless. So it's true that this brief statement came in. However, this court has to focus on other evidence admitted at trial. The officer independently identified the defendant from the photograph as the person he saw fleeing the car. The officer identified the defendant at the time of his arrest as the person he saw fleeing the car. In addition, defendant confessed to committing the crime. Defendant claims that the officer was not credible and that his identification was shaky. Those determinations were for the jury, not for this court. Defendant had the opportunity, and I think I effectively cross-examined the officer and raised any credibility issues that he might have had any motive to tell or not tell the truth. That was for the jury, not for this court. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever in the record that the confession was a fabrication. The officer testified that he talked with the defendant, he was Mirandized, he agreed to talk with the officer, he confessed to committing the crime. He provided a written statement, he put the evidence in, I guess in the station would introduce the evidence and never saw it again. So What happened with that, we don't know, but again, the officer was happy to cross-examination, and the jury had the opportunity to listen to that, and again, any credibility was for the jury to determine.
Ms. Moralita, if I may interrupt, please.
Yes, please.
Well, let's say perhaps, I want to test your statement that credibility is for the jury. Let's say, hypothetically, that the defense had introduced evidence from three other officers who said, hey, we were with Mr. Bagley the entire night, and he never spoke to Officer Cruz after the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would call Officer Cruz's credibility into question, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And then also, wouldn't we assess that information when looking at whether this was harmless?
I don't think so. Well, in that case, you would have contradicting evidence. One officer says, I talked with the defendant, the other officer said no. But in this case, we don't have any evidence contradicting what this officer testified.
I understand, but I guess my question is that in some circumstances, obviously, the credibility of a witness, the strength of that testimony may be have been undermined.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have to consider that undermining as part of our analysis of whether an error of constitutional magnitude was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Right?
Well, I guess you could consider that as a factor, but it is the main credibility determination is for the jury. Because my point is that this court cannot second guess what the jury, the credibility determination that the jury made, whether to believe or not to believe the officer.
But if we're going to make a harmlessness determination, and thus we have to figure out whether this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
Don't we have to sometimes look at the credibility of the case, of the witnesses who testify against the defendant? I mean, for example, I know this is not our case here, but let's assume that you have a witness who is a five-time convicted felon and has made a deal with the prosecution to avoid life in prison. Isn't that part of whether that person has been impeached or not? Isn't that part of our analysis?
I guess it could be part of your analysis, but this court cannot become a 13 juror. That's, I guess, my point. You could consider the credibility of the officer, take into account the whole testimony, take into account everything else that is contained in the record. Oh, any other questions in that regard?
No, thank you.
It seems like your situation made a little bit tougher by the fact that we have to determine that the error surely was unattributable to the admission of Mr. Wilson's statement. And without Mr. Wilson's statement, we have to rely on the identification by Officer Cruz, mm-hmm. which was based on 5 to 10 seconds of seeing him at night, albeit with a spotlight shining on him, apparently, but it was at night. And he's running, and the officer's watching other things at the same time. And plus this confession, which isn't available.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem like under those circumstances, wouldn't it, that any additional piece of evidence would be corroborating and therefore might persuade a juror to. And under those circumstances, isn't it difficult for us to say that the error surely was unattributable to the conviction, or that the conviction was surely unattributable to the admission of the evidence?
I don't think it should be hard for this court to so conclude. We have just one brief statement by this passenger who was with the defendant and most likely was an accomplice, we don't know. And then we have the officer's testimony that he identified the defendant, the person in the photograph was the person he saw in the vehicle. Even though he wasn't at 100%, he said, he testified that he was confident enough to request a warrant for his arrest. He even aired a description of the suspect. So during his testimony, he also stated that he could see the facial features of this of the individual. So we have that testimony, again, an identification at the time of the crime, and then a week later, and also we have the defendant's confession. And then we have just this brief statement by this, by the passenger. And again, the defendant says the officer wasn't credible. That was for the jury. But the jury, assume that the jury believed what the passenger said over what the officer said? I don't know. We clearly, the jury believed what the officer testified 2 or 3 times. So in this case, I don't think this court should conclude that the error contributed to the conviction. It was a very brief statement. And also that takes me to my next point. The defendant complains that during the closing argument, the prosecutor misused that statement. The defendant has not raised a prosecutorial misconduct claim based on the misuse of that statement. That is a separate claim that is not before this court. The defendant is complaining what the introduction of that statement with what the prosecution did.
How could he object? Since the court had already said that the testimony was admissible, what could he do to object? And the only thing he could object to is if it was based on some other basis than what the court ruled, that it was a spontaneous statement, therefore not hearsay. So how could the defendant have objected during closing argument?
Well, because I think the court made clear that the statement, explicit statement, could not be used. It was an exception to the hearsay rule. I think they agreed that it could not be used for the truth, the statements for the truth of the matter asserted.
I didn't read that in the record, but what I understood the record to say was it was admitted as an exception to hearsay, which would mean that it is, understanding is that, wouldn't that mean that it was admitted for the truth?
The explicit statement?
Yes.
Yes. But it could have, it was his obligation to make a contemporaneous objection during closing. I don't think that the prior ruling was enough to preserve that claim. I think the defendant had the obligation to object and alert the court that the prosecution was misusing the evidence, and he did not. So even if the court were to look at that issue, would be looking at under plain error. I don't think the court should look at that issue because it's not before this court. Defendant has not raised prosecutorial misconduct on that claim. Has raised many other grounds, but not on that specific claim. Any other questions from this court? On this one, any other issues? With that, the people request that the defendant's conviction be affirmed. Thank you. As Judge Miller pointed out, the harmless beyond reasonable doubt standard is a high standard. The error has to be surely, or the verdict has to be surely unattributable to the error. The state asserts that this is just a brief statement from Tushon Wilson, but it's a very emphatic identification, and it's one that the prosecutor emphasizes in his arguments to the jury.
The prosecutor's use of this evidence was not misuse of the evidence, as the state asserts. Once the trial court ruled that this evidence was admissible for the truth of the matter asserted, which is the case when it admits it under hearsay exception, the prosecutor was allowed to use that evidence as it did, even though that evidence was improperly admitted in the first place. But the prosecutor's use of the evidence was consistent with the trial court's ruling, so I don't think that it's prosecutorial misconduct for the prosecutor to argue the evidence in the way that he did. It's not a prosecutorial misconduct claim, it's just an argument about why the evidence here was so harmful. The state also argues that the credibility determinations are for the jury, but as you pointed out, Judge Bernard, this is, considering credibility is something a reviewing court has to do, and that's something they explicitly do in Frye, the Colorado Supreme Court case, where they're considering how the jury could have assessed the credibility of this similar corroborating evidence, and says, they say, well, since that evidence was subject to attack by the defense, we can't say that this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's also the case here, where the defense heavily attacks Officer Cruz's credibility, both through cross-examination and through closing argument. The defense did cross Officer Cruz on his changing descriptions as he got more information about Mr. Bagley. His description of the suspect he'd seen became more complete, which is something that the defense pointed out on cross-examination. And then the defense did also emphasize through cross-examination the fact that you would expect there to be documentation of a written confession and a written Miranda waiver, and then in closing argued that the lack of those here suggested that that never existed. Finally, I just want to say that given the prosecutor's, one more point on. The jury is also instructed that they can consider, the jury can consider the absence of evidence. And the absence of evidence here, the absence of that written confession, and the absence of the written Miranda waiver that the officer claimed existed, undermines his credibility here. Finally, just given the prosecutor's emphasis on this testimony, his encouraging the jury to rely on Tushon Wilson's statements as the primary evidence of Mr. Bagley's identity, this court cannot find that this error was harmless beyond any reasonable doubt. So I ask the court to reverse Mr. Bagley's conviction.
Thank you, counsel. That completes arguments in this case. The matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course. Again, thank you for your arguments. They will be helpful in the court making a decision. That concludes our